Good morning. It's good to be back with you after, 4.5 years? Time flies when you're having fun, eh? This morning I wanted to share with you, rather than preach, share a bit about my work, but also to thank you for the support that you give me out in Uganda. I hope I've got a few pictures which I can also share as well, if they are around. It helps me to talk around the pictures. As I say, I was brought up in the Lake District. God has a sense of humor. I don't have O levels, as I say, 2 O levels, no A levels. I've got this degree, and now I've got a doctorate. It's now, but I don't know how I got it, but there you go. God had his plans. And so, anyway, I go with the flow. I'm actually dyslexic as well, so if I use words, I get bamboozled. So I'd prefer to use pictures this morning. I worked with CMS, Church Mission Society. Initially, I was out with Tear Fund for that 1 year, a gap year. God's gap year isn't necessarily a calendar year. I realize that now. And so here I am, still on that gap year. My sister reminds me of that when she's on the phone and perhaps she's having struggles with mum and dad who are not well, back in Penrith, and I'm in Uganda. You're back on your gap year. And I am, but... It's what God wants. So there I go. The next picture, please. Also, African time. African time, we have a lot of time in Africa. I know I've perhaps only got 10, 15 minutes with you, but hey, I've got about 2 hours worth of slides. So I am sitting comfortably. In case you don't know where Uganda is, it's a landlocked country north of Lake Victoria. And I didn't choose to go there. Tear Fund, I went for selection and they said there's a need out there in Africa. Would you be able to go and work alongside a community who needed a hospital building? And that was way back in 1995. And so I did. Next picture. And then this was the group of young men that I got to work with. And these were men in an area where HIV and AIDS had come in the aftermath of the Idi Amin regime. And so it was estimated in that area, 1 in 3 had the HIV virus of that age range of these young men. And so at that time, as a young man myself, I saw other young men and women wither away. There weren't the drugs in those days to sustain life. And so it was a real eye-opener to me to see young men dying. Also, because they had grown up during the Civil War, they didn't have any skills and perhaps had never been to school, and I didn't do well in school anyway. So we're in the same boat in many respects. But I had a craft, my carpentry, and so instead of being a contractor on site and getting a contractor in from the city, we kind of tore up the contract, and that's why the year became several years, and actually we trained the young men in vocational training, and so we built the hospital very locally. We even made our own bricks and quarried our own sand, and so it became their hospital because they actually built it. And that really was what I was about and what I am still doing in East Africa, just coming alongside, not building the buildings necessarily, but trying to build relationships and having time to get to know people, what the needs are, what they have available to use, whether it's skills or material, and then helping them to build their buildings. I've got skills in quantity surveying and things like that, so I'm able to estimate perhaps some of the costs. And it's a bag of cement, really, which is gold dust over there that they need, and so perhaps being able to quantify that. And so this is one of the buildings that we've just finished in Chuoko Hospital, at that hospital. I was there for about 9 years in total, and I really got to know those men. And some of them were Christian, some of them were Muslim, but it was usually the time outside, off the building site, that I really got to know them, as I say, in difficult times, particularly with the HIV, the scourge. But in this day and age, now we have drugs to sustain life. It's wonderful to see people who have the HIV virus now living a relatively normal life, and also mothers who actually, if you can just keep, don't move it on, please. I'll tell you what. Mothers giving birth, they might be HIV positive. The child can be HIV negative, and it's because of these facilities. I go out with CMS and work with the local diocese, and it's really the diocese taking charge of healthcare and education. And so that's why we are building these buildings in Uganda. I was there for 9 years and then moved on to southern Sudan. CMS said, you need to work yourself out of a job. And so I was able to train up 2 or 3 local lads, and they're now keeping the buildings at the hospital and maintaining it. It was just an opportunity and a time for me to get to know them and them to get to know me, and for me to get African feet and not want to come back to the UK. My gap year continues. Okay, you can move on to the next picture, please. I then moved up north and then into the Sudan, as it was, in 2001. And that's north of Uganda. And at that time, there was a civil war going on. It was very different to Uganda. Uganda was starting to fall back on its feet and development starting to come up. But the Sudanese, many of the South Sudanese, were displaced in refugee camps. But I was asked to go and work in the Sudan, as it was, in the midst of a civil war, which it was a very difficult time. Next picture. This had been a derelict building, one of the diocese buildings. And the diocese, with their head screwed on, knew that I was a builder and asked me to go and live in it. Well, it was a derelict building at the time. We had to make a mud hut beside it. And they had raised money to repair this building. And so it took nearly 2 years to build that building. Perhaps it would have, in Uganda, in central Uganda, probably would have taken only a few months. But because of the civil war, it was a very difficult time. We used to have the old Russian bomber coming from Khartoum in the north and dropping bombs out of the back. Thankfully, it didn't hit this building. But I was in the same boat with the local community. You know, those bombs were going on. But again, coming alongside and getting to know the people at that time and trying to make ends meet. And we did want to build a few schools in those days, but we were praying for peace to come, so that the people could come back from the refugee camps. And many of the people had lived a whole generation outside of their country at that time. Next picture. Every now and again, we used to have people come, visitors, and they would perhaps give money to support. And so again, my role was to look at how much money we could use and then use local materials and skills where we could to build schools and hospitals. So this was a couple who had come from America, who had retired but wanted to come out to the Sudan, as it was then, and had some money in their back pocket. And I was saying, please don't bring your money yet, because we need to find out, you know, how much it would really cost to build a school or a health facility here, and how much we can actually do for ourselves. So not all aid money helps, you know. And so for me, I was in no man's land sometimes. I was with the local church and helping them, and then you would have donors coming out and say, we want to give money. And I was saying, perhaps you shouldn't just now. Let's go back. And the local church saying, hang on, don't stop the money. And I said, but we can do a lot for ourselves. And trying to encourage people to stand on their own 2 feet can be difficult. And it's through the relationships that we're able to do that in understanding. And often donors, they don't have time to come and build those relationships. And that's the problem with aid sometimes. We get a lot of bad press because of that. And it's in those relationships that we really can do something together. Next picture. So this is one of the schools way back then, during the time in Sudan. And it was a difficult time. The civil war was going on, and much of the church was displaced. Next picture. And this was one of the schools that we built back then. It perhaps doesn't look much to you, but I know for the kids who went to that school, they'd never seen painted walls before. You know, it was, you know, quite something to go to that school and to try and fit kids into that school. You know, they come from out the woodwork. There are so many of them. Next picture. And these are some of the drawings. And this is a drawing, actually, of a health clinic that I built. And this is now in 2014 and 15. By that time, Sudan had become the South Sudan. It had gained its independence in 2011. And many of the people had come home, back home to South Sudan from refugee camps. And we're starting to rebuild our life, hope, people. And people were de-skilled. I mean, living in refugee camp for a whole generation, they hadn't learned to till the land. They had received aid, food aid, and not known how to actually cultivate for themselves. So it was a steep learning curve for the South Sudanese, as they were now, as an independent country. And so again, working with the local church and community, we were setting up these buildings, facilities like health centres. But again, the materials, locally made, local labour, and that kind of thing. And so that's what I was particularly involved with. And since I've last seen you. Next picture. This is the health centre going up in South Sudan. And I was, at the same time, I was involved with several schools, other health facilities, one or two churches, cathedrals. You know, I mean, each bishop would have his wish list. And, I wasn't there to grant their wishes. It was really for them to do their bit for themselves, but to encourage, to stand alongside, really. Next picture. And so this was the health centre, which was finished, actually, in 2016. And we opened it. Next picture. And this was the inside. And it was quite a facility in that area. They didn't have any hospital care at all. And so we were able to get skilled nurses and doctors and drugs to support them. And it was funded locally and through that diaspora. So South Sudanese had made a life outside in Europe, in Australia, had raised money for their own people. And so we were able to then build this building. Next picture. This is their cathedral. I said in the last service that the bishop had gone to the Lambeth Conference, part of the Anglican Communion they would all go off to, you know, and their eyes were opened by the facilities that we have. And this particular bishop had gone to York Minster, and he'd come back, "Gary, I want to York Minster." We have over 2,000 people in our congregation. We need, you know, we're worshipping under trees. As well, I mean, do we have the funds for a York? Have we got time to build a York Minster? Have I got the ability to help? No. But my background in farming, I had an idea of agricultural sheds. And I had a few plans, actually. And this was the beginning of our cathedral, which was actually based on an agricultural shed in the Lake District. But please don't say anything. But it was practical. It's what we were able to use with the money available and the materials at hand. And so this was our cathedral. Next picture. And this was the first service in this cathedral. The bishop was right. It wasn't big enough. There were more than 2,000 people there and people under the trees. And everyone was cram-packed in. But it was amazing just to be there, to worship with the same people who had been displaced. Displaced, you know, in refugee camps for more than a generation, to be back home worshipping God together. And, you know, a faith, in many respects, a very simple faith, but to worship together and thank God for what they had. Next picture. This was the Mothers' Union, and I went behind them and took this picture of these ladies. Some of them, you know, old ladies, you know, 70s, 80s, I don't know how old. But these ladies were the same ladies who carried water to mix the concrete to make the cathedral, and they're worshipping God. Alert not to mess with the Mothers' Union. These ladies were strong ladies, you know, in more than one way. And but an amazing group of people. Next picture. So this was the outside of this church. And as I say, we built several churches with different communities. I couldn't work with every community, sadly. Some of the communities, they just we just didn't build a relationship. They expected everything on a plate. And sadly, I couldn't work with them because I can't do this by myself. It has to come from them. And so with this particular community, we built several schools. This church, this cathedral, and other facilities. So it was a great time together. Next picture. This picture was only taken 2 weeks after the last. And this is the people fleeing for their lives again back to northern Uganda. It was a very sad time. From that high went to a low within such a short time. And their own people, their own government and army waged war on their own people. And that's the situation as it is now. Over 1 million people, those people, are back in refugee camps in northern Uganda. Despite what we've been able to do back in their homeland, they can't go back. And so that's the sad situation that we find ourselves in. And so that reading from Joshua, I was reading it the other night, and I thought, wow, that is the call from the church in South Sudan, you know, pleading with God. Why, you know? What were those words? We looked for peace, but no good came, for a time of healing, but behold, terror. And that's the situation there. And, you know, they realize it's their own people that's doing it. But for them, you know, they just want peace. They just want to get on with their lives. And, you know, they're really suffering at the moment in northern Uganda in these refugee camps. Next picture. And so from their homesteads that they'd just rebuilt back to camps that the UN are providing now. And it's a sorry situation. But as a Christian, I want to stand alongside them, alongside the displaced church, and continue to try and help them all I can. I am working in other areas in Uganda. Uganda is standing on its own feet. Yes, there's lots of corruption and things like that. I don't want to get involved. I just want to stand alongside the church, particularly on the borders with South Sudan. And I'm also in the very south of Uganda, on the Congo and Rwandan border as well, working with the people there, though I'm based in Kampala. So this is the situation. Next picture. This is the cathedral now. They're probably meeting, well, they're 2 hours in front of us. Well, because their service is gone and on and on. Probably they're still in the worship service. But remember the picture of the cathedral we built? This is the cathedral now, displaced under tent. And yet they worship together. They continue. They all meet, you know. It's incredible, the faith that they have. Praising God. Encouraging. That's the encouragement for me. We heard the New Testament reading from Philippians, the encouragement from Paul. I get my encouragement from you, from the support I get from you and other churches in the UK, and also from these people as they worship together despite the conditions that they face in northern Uganda. And we pray for peace. Though there is this suffering going on now, we pray, Lord, when is this going to end? And it's hard to see an end because of the political situation in South Sudan. But I stand alongside these local people, and I thank you for your support in that. I'm going to end there because I could go on and on. I've got many, many more slides, and this isn't Africa or African time. Just to show you one or two more pictures, the next one. These last two pictures were only taken in the last month. We've had a terrible drought in northern Uganda, which has lasted 2 years. And suddenly, at the end of February, the rains came, and they didn't stop, and they haven't stopped. We should now be back in the dry season again. And this is the conditions that they are facing now in the refugee camps. It's flooding, there's malaria, cholera, and all the other things. So it's a sad situation that they're in at the moment. But the church is there, and I'm sure they are worshipping right now in that refugee camp. Just the next picture. Yeah, that's one of my cars, which was just ruined now. a couple of weeks ago when they were trying to get to one of the refugee camps, sadly. Anyway, but the engine got spoiled. Sorry, it's sad, but there is a joy in it as well, in knowing the church is there despite all that's going on. And sometimes I want to bottle it and bring it here, and, you know, it's an incredible time. Anyway, I'm wittering now, so.
Thank you very much indeed, Gary, and please, we're with you.
Thank you.
And we're with the people you're with as well. And we're glad to have this continuing partnership.
I appreciate it.
It's 5 or 6 years now, I think.
That it is. Yes.
We've been supporting you as a church,
yep,
and helping you in your regular visits home to ailing parents.
Yep.
We're really glad to do that.
Thank you.
As an important way of helping sustain the work that you and the diocese out there are doing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your fellowship in the ministry.
Okay.
Let's give him a hand.
Thank you. Okay. God bless.